Welcome to Pleb Chain Radio, a live show brought to you by Plebs for Plebs, which focuses on the intersection of Nostr and Bitcoin protocols. Join QW and Avi as they run down the weekly news and developments, breaking down the current thing and the future frontier with the foundation of decentralization, the builders, thinkers, doers, and plebs. All right, we are live.
Welcome, gentle plebs, to episode number 89 of Plebchain Radio. Today is Friday, the 29th of November, and it is 2 p.m. on the dot on the east coast of the United States at the time of recording. It is the most wonderful time of the year. It's NGU season, and I dare say this is the last episode of Plebchain Radio before Bitcoin hits 100K. We have a great show ahead of you today. None Your Business, podcasting legend, host of the Bitcoin and podcast, fast approaching, or perhaps already approached, the landmark of 1,000 podcast episodes recorded, is our guest today, and he joins us to answer the question of how he did that, and perhaps equally importantly, why? Just a reminder, if you are listening to the show on Apple or Spotify podcasts, first of all, thank you for listening, but I would urge you to hit pause and switch over to Fountain, where you can earn some sats and support the value for value revolution. As you listen, the show is recorded live on Nostrness and streamed live on zap.stream and any other Nostr client that supports streaming, such as Amethyst and Nostr. And for our meme readout today, it is the four stages of Winnie the Pooh's evolution or sophistication. It's a four-frame meme. The first frame is a very plain-looking Winnie the Pooh with the caption, podcast. The second frame is a fairly dapper looking Winnie the Pooh wearing a tuxedo and a bow tie, and the caption is Bitcoin podcast. The third frame is a positively sophisticated Winnie the Pooh wearing a top hat and a monocle, and the caption is Bitcoiners talking to Bitcoiners about Bitcoin on a Bitcoin podcast. And the final frame is a regal or a royal looking Winnie the Pooh wearing a royal robe and a crown. And the caption is Bitcoin podcasters talking to Bitcoin podcasters about Bitcoin podcasting on a Bitcoin podcast. And with that, QW, you've been keeping an eye on Nostr culture. What have you got for us?
I have. And Avi, I'm just so happy that you survived. I understand, from my understanding, you were at Walmart early this morning, in line. You almost got crushed in the pile up at that TV, that flat screen you were looking for. So I'm happy you made it back without injury, without any you know, life-threatening injuries, I should say.
69-inch flat screen TV, kid.
$420.
$420. I survived the riot at Walmart, as one does.
Did you ask them if they accept Bitcoin at the register mid chaos?
I would never pass up an opportunity to orange pill.
Culture Corner. So one big thing I saw this week, which is awesome, and Oscar Mary, I feel like we say his name on our show a lot because, you know, he is the face of the Fountain team. But that Fountain Radio takeover, so they're doing like live radio, like you would normally see in like a legacy broadcasting radio. But Joe Martin did his yesterday, 2 days ago, and Ainsley, I think, might even be going on right now, but it started, it's this morning. So Ainsley Costello, obviously, you know, Fountain Radio takeover. I just think it's neat that we just continue to see more and more features pushed out through on the cultural side, through Fountain Client. So that's a big one. Secondly, when we're going to have our, you know, dare I say, we have our show next week kind of spotlighting this event, but Sats by Southwest. So December 15th through 16th at in Austin, the Value for Value event. And we've starting to see a lot of these Value for Value events starting to come almost like a monthly deal, all the way back from the original, I think it was a year ago almost, with Ainsley and Just Loud. But that V for V event, there'll be a summit at the Bitcoin Commons. And then the artist showcase at Antone's nightclub. So the website for that, Sats by SW. So satsbysouthwest.com.
And that's yet another example, QW, of people trying to part us from our precious sats as Bitstein, or also known as Michael Goldstein, once famously said, everyone's a scammer because they're trying to get your sats.
Yeah, I mean, let's just keep using sats as in lieu of dollars, and I'm happy with that. You know, I saw something about Russia legalizing it as property. Bitcoin is property now. I just, like, it's not digital real estate to me. I mean, it is, but, you know, let's keep using it as currency. Let's get these sats flying. Let's get these circular economies going. You know, that's the most amazing part of Bitcoin, in my opinion, is that transaction. The transacting part. But with that said, sermon, Avi.
Indeed. And our sermon is, podcasting is low time preference. And QW, if you look at the internet, if you actually look at it, right, with your eyes, you will see that it is littered with the carcasses of podcasts that didn't make it past episode number 9. It is that magic number. If you can make it past episode number 9, there is a reasonable chance that you survive. But it does take a certain level of self-belief, or perhaps even self-delusion, I'd say, QW, to believe that people will actually want to listen to what you have to say when you're about to start a podcast. And then most people who are able to embrace that self-delusion begin their journeys at this peak, at this crest of hope and aspiration that they finally made it. And that very quickly gives way to the valley of despair and abandonment. That's around the episode number 8 or 9 timeframe. And you realize that you start seeing a few flaws in your initial hope. Very few make it past that valley of despair and abandonment into the plateau of Zen-like contentment. And one of the reasons is the attachment a lot of early podcasters have to how they'll be perceived by their audience, whether they'll sound smart, whether they'll be appreciated and loved, is what trips them up, because they tailor their content to that perception. But at some point, maybe this is past episode number 8 or 9 again, the successful podcaster realizes that you're doing this podcast for yourself because you have something to say and you want to say it, and it scratches an itch. And that leads to a type of authenticity. And the irony here, QW, is the ones who failed, who were attached to the audience perception and tailoring their content to that, is really that authenticity, once that starts coming out in this zone of Zen-like contentment, that's when the audience gets the most value out of your podcast. And I mean, look, we're talking to someone who today who's certainly well-versed in this entire cycle and is created a legendary status for himself by doing so.
Yeah, you said episode 8 to 9, and we're on PCR 89. I think our secret has just been embracing the self-delusion, Avi. I think it's something that it's a powerful mechanism when you just embrace it. You know, it's kind of like HODL in the bear market. You know, you start thinking, wait, is this going to zero? No, I'm going to HODL. Let's just keep rolling. So I'm very much looking forward to this guest. And honestly, I couldn't do a better sermon, Avi. That was poetic. I really appreciated that. You inspired me. You know, I'm coming off 1 week of I lost last week because I was sick, and I felt the FOMO, well, my son was sick and then I was, but having a week off, I'm ready to get back in the ring. And sometimes maybe that's just it. Sometimes you need to take a week off, or sometimes you need to reconnect with yourself to be your best self when you do these podcasts.
I hope it gave you time to reflect, as I have, QW, on why our audience, speaking of the self-delusion, embracing the self-delusion, why our audience continues to show up, not just on the live show, but especially on the Fountain side, right? We're in the thousands of downloads per episode. It's two middle-aged guys prattling on about topics they have no clue about. With an acute case of the Dunning-Kruger effect. That said, I genuinely appreciate you, our audience, for indulging our self-delusion.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And indulging on Fountain via boosts, shares, Noster, any kind of interaction, just let us feel like we're alive, you know, so that someone's listening. Well, good enough, Avi. Speaking of someone listening, it's been, 86? I'm not sure which episode Nunya
number
was
nine.
On. It was number nine. So it's been 80 shows. And this gentleman is one of the main reasons I joined Noster at the very first. Well, the when I finally pulled the trigger and made an account, listening to Bitcoin and podcast. He was one of the first people I listened to on a podcast that even mentioned Noster, and he understood it quickly. He understood the power of it, and he was selling it early. So, you know, I'm sure his Noster stack is his bag has risen since. So, welcome to the show, the one and only Nunya Bidness.
Good morning, or
welcome back.
Good morning for me. I don't know about the rest of the world. So, but howdy.
Yeah, were you at Walmart with Avi this morning?
God, no. There's no way I'm setting foot in that kind of shit right now, man.
69 inch for 420. That's
I can't. I just can't. I mean, I might amuse myself with the inevitable Twitter films that are going to come out showing people losing their ever loving mind over a redheaded Barbie doll. I don't know. I might, but I'm not. No.
The only reason I bought a 69-inch flat screen TV is to show some green candles. It's entertainment. It's end users.
Thought maybe enough. Your TV wasn't big enough for the God candle, huh?
Exactly, the God candle.
You got your
fit.
Pub key zap.stream going right now with your. Let's get Corn Man. Let's get Derek Ross with the corn. Mask on, just pumping those candles.
Nadia, what do you think about all of these watch parties? By the way, just to clarify, I do not indulge in Black Friday. This is just
lies.
what do you think of all of these 100K watch parties that are popping up all over the place on Zap.stream and then on X? There's all sorts of stuff going on as well.
Oh God, to be brutally honest, it's a waste of everybody's time. I mean, I should probably be more happy about it, but I've just been around for so long where I'm looking at stuff going, I've been here. I've already done this. I did this at 10,000. I did this at 20,000. I did this at God. I mean, it's this never ending psychology that works on everybody, where what I see is that we're continuously okay. What I see is that what we're really doing here is that we're continuously looking at the value of Bitcoin as it pertains to the United States dollar. And I think that doesn't really, I think that's kind of insulting. So I'll just leave it there.
Yeah, I'm in the theory that 100K is the new 73K, and we're going to be sitting here for 8 months live streaming. I kid, but man, that would be poetically hilarious.
It could do this, BKW.
Yeah. Yeah, but like we were saying before the show, it's when everyone stops live streaming is when it finally goes. It's there's too much FOMO, but we shall see. Speaking of big century marks, this might be a trick question, Nanya, because if you're like us, you might have had some ephemeral shows, some that maybe got lost in the hard drive. But did you reach your 1,000th show?
No, I'm at 998.
Have you lost any?
Not that I'm aware of. Okay. I keep a pretty good tabs on like every single one of the MP3s that I generate ends up getting backed up on a hard drive. And I've got every single one. There have been a couple that I lost, but the numbering was so instantiated that I know that I'm at 998.
How's it feel to get that far? Any human would have to say you start looking at that 1,000th and you're like, wow, this is getting up there. I'm getting into four digits now.
Yeah. I've been thinking about it for a while. I started looking at it when I crossed over 950, somewhere between the 950 to 970, I started going, wow, this is something that I wasn't looking at that when.
So that was last week, though.
It was a little bit longer than that, but it's been a few weeks that I've been having to kind of like sit down and kind of think about this thing. And, you know, and this is all coming on the heels of, you know, people like Peter McCormick bailing out and starting Mr. Obnoxious. And then I listened to Guy Swan talk about him collapsing all of his stuff back into Bitcoin Audible instead of having four or five different podcasts. And it looks to me like there seems to be some consolidation in the whole thing and in the whole podcasting space. And I think a lot of that might be because that whole Apple thing, when they, I don't know if you were aware, but a couple of months ago, Apple, if you were subscribed to a podcast, what would happen is that no matter if you listen to the podcast episode or not, it would automatically be downloaded to your Apple podcast and a few other ones that were following the structure of Apple podcast. And so download numbers were, you know, that's the way download numbers were done. And then a couple of months ago, Apple said, no, we're not going to auto download all these episodes. If you're subscribed to a show, you're going to have to actually go through and go get that. So download numbers, according to Adam Curry, essentially halved, and it really destroyed a lot of the podcast advertising that was going on. And because of that, it was that reason that we're seeing some shifting going on in the general podcast genre, and then obviously the subgenre of Bitcoin podcast. So there's lots of changes, but you know, I've been sitting here doing podcasts without advertising all the way up until 998. So honestly, I'm kind of unaffected.
I was not aware of this, Nanya. So essentially Apple was enabling this kind of wash trading, right? That was sending faulty signals to advertisers. And once they realized what was going on, they pulled the plug, and you're seeing the consolidation. That's wow. Good to know. I mean, we're Fountain people. Well, first of all, we don't have advertisers, and we're on Fountain anyway, for the most part. So it never affected us.
Yeah, it really, I have been doing everything that I can to really take the model of value for value and push it. And to be honest, you know, it does not really pay the bills, but the value for value model it's not going to go away. And I think that if we can have some, you know, show some patience again, it's like we've all been trained in readjusting our time scales to having a very low time preference. Because if you still exist in this world of Bitcoin, if you don't have low time preference, then you're either psychotic or you're in a coma and it's a forced low time preference. But that kind of patience training is really the only reason why I'm going to hit 1,000 is because I'm either psychotic or there's something about the value for value model that is going to have to push through. I think it will, but I don't think it happens quickly. And as we've seen, it has not been quick, but it is what it is. It's one of those things where I keep doing the show because I keep getting I either keep getting zapped when I release a show notice on Noster. I keep getting Satoshi streamed to me, which go directly to my node, not to a third party. Or sometimes I get giant boostograms, you know, and honestly, when somebody does that, at one point or another, you know, 21,000 Satoshi boost, I think about it in the future, as far as purchasing power value is concerned, not what it is ranked next to the US dollar when I get it in. And because I look at it that way, I'm like, man, because I'm pretty sure that the guy that cut those Satoshis is also thinking, I don't know, man, what does 21,000 Satoshis buy me 10 years from now? And when I look at it that way, when I can project out into the future, I start going, this has to be worth it. It's a different model than advertising. Advertising, the modeling for advertising is falling on its ass. Everywhere you look, it's falling on its ass. If you start looking at mainstream media like CNBC, their major advertisers is like Pfizer. They were never going to be able to tell you that there might be something wrong with one of the products that Pfizer produces, because if they did, Pfizer would be all over the marketing and sales department for CNBC saying, we're going to pull the plug if you guys don't shut up. So you end up with the situation where your advertisers at that level can dictate exactly what your content is. And I think that filters down even to the smallest levels, where you're kind of beholden to your advertisers to never be able to be honestly critical about a product or a service that they might have. And when Adam Curry and Dave Jones are the two guys that developed the whole podcasting 2.0, and the whole value for value model was actually produced by Adam Curry and John C. Dvorak. And now they've instantiated in podcasting 2.0 with Dave Jones running the back end and Adam Curry sort of fronting the whole issue. It's the only way out. And we, in my opinion, we kind of exist in this weird pre-Renaissance timescale where we are looking at everywhere we can get out. I mean, everything sucks, and all we're doing as a population of the planet is looking for exits, and exits exist, but it's a hard push to go through those. So when you're value for value only, it's absolutely because you're in love with it.
Well, this is a classic case of only the strong survive, right, Nanya? I mean,
well, it's Nanya, you have you ever had a guest on your show in 1,000 shows?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I don't
how do it often. Yeah. Cuz I think one of the big driver for Avi and I with the value for value side is it's not just monetized, it's the learning, the you know, just like we're absorbing your wisdom today, there certainly is a human aspect of value for value that comes into play in our shows. And if it was just Avi and I talking, I feel like, and it was just, that was our show, it'd be a lot, I think there'd be a lot more mental anguish, especially in that self-belief, self-delusion crosshair, the intersection there. But it's something where, you know, it's got to be a lot harder to be a one-man show type of thing and it without, you know, a team or whatever. So.
Yeah, it can get lonely from a mental standpoint, but there's a freedom there and honestly, what it really boils down to is a freedom of scheduling. If I'm doing guests or I'm, you know, like a guest on another show, I got to make sure everybody around me knows what time that's occurring. But if I'm, when I'm just doing my solo shows and I'm just, you know, going through the news and doing the analysis, I can do that on my time and nobody is, you know, almost nobody else is impacted by that. So there's a freedom involved, but that freedom, there's always a trade-off, right? There's trade-offs on everything. You get a little bit of freedom, but you're going to have to give up a little bit of camaraderie. And that's sort of the way that I've been existing for, let's see, I started this thing in 2018. And I didn't start realizing that it was a little bit lonely until a couple of years ago. And I don't mean like, I'm not sad. I'm just saying that, you know, without a co-host, without, you know, like a steady stream of guests coming in, it can get a little lonely. And that's just, you know, that's just the fact. But that trade-off is that I pretty much get to do whatever I want to do. And, you know, I got to balance the two sides, and I'm going to have to start getting more guests on the show, but it's kind of like, you know, I kind of am a little bit locked into the previous model, and changing those models around, that's hard. It's mentally kind of difficult to let go of something that you feel very comfortable doing. And then, you know, getting, you know, back out into your, I'm very uncomfortable kind of zone. You see what I'm saying?
And how good are you at time zone math?
Oh God, I'm terrible at it. You know that. I know. I thought I was going to be on at 5 o'clock this afternoon. And you're like, dude, it goes the other way. And I'm like, oh shit.
Yeah. Pacific is later.
I never get this right. I was much better at it when I was in Central Time Zone because I had time zones on both sides of me, but like, yeah. I'm on the edge of the cliff over here.
Yeah. That's one thing with our show. And you know, when we had the lightning round, a lot of times we'd have Marseille or Lao and then our guests would be, so we'd have like four time zones conjoining and we're all trying to schedule this show that's live, not recorded. it's been a crash course, hasn't it been, Avi?
Well, in my fiat job, I work with global teams, so I'm kind of used to juggling time zones, QW. But yes, there were moments, especially like you said, when we were juggling Lao, Marseille, and the guest times, and then not to mention your time zone and mine are not the same.
Mine's mountains, so we are daylight saving disrespectors. So I jump from Pacific sometimes, right. and then mountain the other times. But yeah, I mean, it must be nice, Avi, to be on the East Coast time, where the world revolves around you. You know,
yeah, it is good. East Coast is good for that.
So Nanya, let's talk about the early days of Bitcoin and. Number one, why did you say, hey, I'm going to do this? But, you know, 2018, was there a lot of Bitcoin podcasts at that time? And kind of what was the format or the setup? What RSS were you using? Kind of that kind of stuff.
Well, the RSS feed, I just went to SoundCloud. Yeah. I just got hosted over there. I bought their pro. I think it was, I want to say it was like 250, 270 bucks a year. So it wasn't bad. And it was unlimited uploads. And I started out with the free RSS and I was only doing a couple of shows a week. And then started doing more and I hit my upload limit. And I'm like, ah, shit, if I want to, you know, make this something, you know, more, I'm going to have to actually pay them what they want for their pro edition. So I was like, okay, well, I pulled the trigger on that. And I stayed on that RSS feed for, oh my God, until about 8 months ago, I moved over to podhome.fm. And that was the best thing that I'd ever done because they've got all the podcast, they've got most of the podcasting 2.0 enabled features. So that was sort of the way that I did the RSS was I started free and then I went to a paid tier subscription and then I just moved over to a completely different company. And honestly, the like if you go to my RSS feed now and go look for episode 271, you're not going to find it because it didn't move over. I'd have to, I got 500 of them to move over with the automated moving tool that Podhome has, but the ones before that didn't come over. So I'm going at one point or another, I want to get into my archive and re-upload them manually. But, and in the early days, clearly I also had no idea what I was doing. I didn't know really, I had an idea of what I thought I wanted the show to be. And then it just kind of morphed into me realizing that I was being inundated with news about what was going on in Bitcoin and macroeconomics on a daily basis. And I had all these podcasts because there were quite a bit. I think Marty Bent's show started about 6 months before mine. Guy Swan had been going for about 8 months before that. And then I think Peter McCormick's was going about 8 months before mine as well. But I was part of I was listening to the podcast back from 2015, like Bitcoin Knowledge Podcast was the first one that I ever hit. That was, oh God, what is that guy? What is that dude's name? He's in Wyoming with Caitlin Long. Ah. He was the guy that everybody loved him as a Bitcoiner, and then he started handing out like little paper strips with "Grin is the next Bitcoin" written on them. You remember that?
Is that Chris DeRose?
No. I was listening to his show as well, along with his partner. I can't remember this guy's name. It'll
it
come
from
to
that podcast, the Bitcoin Knowledge.
Yeah, Bitcoin Knowledge
Trace
podcast.
Mayer?
Yeah, Trace Mayer. He was the first one that I started listening.
Google for the save there.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah,
the evil empire.
I was listening to him first. I got lucky because he was like, you really don't want to deal with shitcoins. And the only shitcoin experience that I had was buying a little bit of ETH. And it took me 6 months to get out of that. And then I held on to a stupid stack of Doge until it was 74 cents. And I cut loose on that one. And that was it. That I've never, you know, I got really lucky with the podcast that I had selected at that time. So there were quite a few, but none of them were going through the daily news. And what I really didn't like doing was having to sit down and read all these articles. And I kept looking for somebody to, would you please read them for me? Nobody was reading the news. You know, there was Guy Swan, he was reading papers. But nobody was giving daily news. And I'm like, okay, well, if you want to be the change, if you're going to have to be the change that you want to see in the world, then you're going to have to figure out how to get these, you know, get what you think is the best articles for the day, line them up and figure out a way to read them all live, because the entire generation of the show was to be able to wake up at 5 a.m, have the show completely pre-produced and everything set to go within 1 hour and or 30 minutes better, and then record for 1 hour and then do post-production for 15 minutes and have that thing published out and marketed by the time my kids were ready to go to school. And I did it that way for like 4 straight years. And that's, you know, still to this day, it's like there, I'm one of the only people that will do, you know, that's doing a daily news so that people understand what the hell's going on that day.
Yeah. Well, that's certainly a valuable service then, Anir. Now, QW and I, unfortunately, didn't have the good fortune to not go down the shitcoin way back in 2016, 2017, 2018.
We didn't have our Trace Mayer.
Right. So I certainly was not that plugged into Bitcoin culture back then. Around the block size was, I was listening to a little bit of Tone Vase and Jimmy Song, but you know, there was a lot of other shitcoin crap that was that caught my fancy back then. What was Bitcoin culture like back then, the Bitcoin only culture like in 2018 when you began compared to today?
It was just as rabid, except there wasn't as many as many different personalities out there. Because like you mentioned, Tone Vase, the second podcast that I started listening to was the Bitcoin group, which had Tone Vase, Mad Bitcoins, the One Vortex, and Jimmy Song was always on there. So that was like when I started getting into the into this, those were the folks like Trace Mayer and then the guys that I just mentioned. And then Chris DeRose and I can't remember his partner's name offhand.
Was that Jen Seth?
Yeah, Jen Seth. And those guys. And honestly, man, Bitcoin culture was just as rabid back then as it is now, except there just wasn't as many people, or at least there wasn't as many personalities, because there was like, I had 1, 2, 3, 4, I think 4 solid podcasts that were just about, you know, mostly about Bitcoin. And if they mentioned shit coins, it was just basically to either rag on it or demonstrate how it screwed up so people can stay away from it. Like the, MetaMask wallet fiasco back in 2017, you know, that kind of thing. So honestly, it really wasn't all that different. It's just now there's a lot more very high quality people in the space, but we're all still rabid.
It's the immune response, right? It's the immune response has grown stronger.
We were talking about immune response back in the day. We definitely were looking at it, this guttural reaction to any of the new shit coins coming online. And back in that day, I mean, 2016 through the first half of 2018, all you saw was another white paper about another shit coin that was going to replace Bitcoin. And then it got so bad that we started seeing white papers that were plagiarized from one or two or three different white papers. We saw one, and I can't remember who it was, but we saw one. The white paper was 100% plagiarized from 9 different white papers from 9 different shitcoins. And all of the people that were on the quote unquote board of directors, they were all fake pictures. It got that bad.
I can't imagine what it would have been like if ChatGPT had existed back then.
Oh God. I don't even want to conjecture about that, because that's honestly a damn scary thought. Cause it was bad enough with human, you know, some of the human beings that we were having to deal with. I just can't imagine what it would have been like if we had had these capabilities back then. I think we dodged a bullet, honestly.
Venmo just partnered with MetaMask, didn't they?
I think so. Yeah.
I saw something where you can buy, you can use USD through Venmo with MetaMask. It's like, oh boy, this cycle is going to get real crazy.
Yeah. It could. I really hate saying the words this time it's different, but something does feel different. And I think it has a lot to do with these derivative products. I mean, for years, all we really had to deal with, we dealt with two things. We dealt with buying spot Bitcoin at an exchange or somewhere, and futures contracts, especially beginning with BitMEX and watching people get leveraged long at 100x and just get wiped out. But that was it. We had futures contracts, we had spot Bitcoin, and now we had that forever and ever and ever until last January, when they opened the pipes up on the ETFs. And I don't know. I don't know what I expect out of this cycle, honestly.
Let's not forget MicroStrategy and all the crazy financial engineering that's going on with MicroStrategy derivatives.
Oh God. See, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, I could list off all the things that I can remember off the top of my head, but it's about all the shit that I can't remember that is going on right now that was definitely not going on in 2017, 2018, and 2019. That is what I'm getting at when I'm like, this time it's at least slightly different. And I don't know what the downstream effects of the compounding, all these compounding forces are together on the purchasing power, the availability, the liquidity of all of Bitcoin at this point. I don't know. If I were to make any kind of judgment whatsoever, I'd be leading everybody astray because I don't know what's going on. I mean, all I can do is bring the news, you know, as many times during the week that I can, and hope that I give enough analysis that people can make a good straight up decision as to what they think's going on for that day.
Well, and is, you know, when you say, when you mentioned that this time is different, Avi did lever up right when you said that. He's going full Monty, but history will tell us there's always going to be this black swan event, and I think Avi alluded to it last show. Like, something doesn't feel right with this MicroStrategy thing. We look at Fortress Trust right now doing weird shit, and you're like, what's going on over there? You know, we kind of are looking for that reason why it's not different, you know, as far as how we've kind of been, how we've endured the cycles in the past.
Yeah, exactly. Cause you got Metaplanet, you got Similar Scientific, you got, Saylor himself, you got Saylor talking to Microsoft. They haven't done anything yet, but it's just like every time I turn around,
they're giving them 3 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, every time I turn around, it's like some other mid-level institution is buying like 20 million, like Marathon just like bought,
$1 billion. A company that literally has to sell it to buy more units. It's in like an arms race now buying.
I will say the convertible bond market has come alive because of the Saylor play, right? Because they're just issuing debt at zero because you can play with the premium, right, on these convertible notes. So it's not a market rate debt, like the rate interest rate. If you play around with the premium, you can actually get it to zero. I've heard suggestions that you could get negative rate notes if you suppress the premium, the conversion premium deep enough. But that market has completely exploded in the last 6 to 8 months.
Yeah, and I don't see it stopping anytime soon. Because you're gonna, I mean, we're not even in. I don't even think we're into the phase where I'm just going to say the institutions, for lack of a better term. I don't think we're into the phase where we have stragglers. I think we're still in the early adopter phase on the industrial side. And so I expect that to ramp up. And I think that's going to, you know, take a while, but then there's going to be that tail of the stragglers that are like, they waited and waited and waited. And they just got to a point where they were, you know, they risk becoming a zombie company unless they have this stuff on their books. So there's going to be like that long tail of just stragglers continuously buying whatever the hell's left. And which leads me to something that I keep thinking about, I've been thinking about lately, is what does all this do to the liquidity aspect of Bitcoin?
There's no proof of reserve, then nothing, right?
That's true. That's definitely true. And I definitely want to see a lot more proof of reserve, and I know that I'm not going to get it. So I'm going to make assumptions that a lot of these people do not have or in possession of the physical Bitcoin that they say that they're in possession of. And that may actually be the next break, the cause of the next breakdown. If we have one. I mean, like I said, I make no predictions, but if we look at the past cycles, and there's going to be a point at which we hit a top, and then it, like that, something usually happens around the top that causes a sell-off. And I wonder if it's like news breaks that it's provable that, I don't know, some company X said they had 100,000 Bitcoin, but they only had 10. And it was proven and it was put out into the public, FTX. And then all of a sudden, last cycle it was Bitcoin.
And Coinbase and Tether, a lot of their books is just trust me, bro. I mean, that's really where we're at, I feel like.
Yeah, Coinbase Coinbase is the one that doesn't scare me, but it is definitely the biggest whale that's out there that I know of.
And all it takes is a hack, right? It doesn't even have to be like them lying about their Bitcoin. They could have all the Bitcoin they claim to be custodying. But all it takes is a hack, like through social engineering, right?
Avi, they are well built oiled machine. Just look at every time the price pumps and they go down. Never when it goes down that they go down. It's when it's going up, right? Oh man. All right. Well, we veered off. Let's continue to focus on Bitcoin and Danya, because I think it really needs to be celebrated, your proof of work. So obviously 998 shows coming up on 1,000. What are some highs and lows? What have you had issues? Have you had some OMG moments, some, oh shit, I shouldn't have said that a week later type of things? Anything that comes to mind?
Not I don't mind being wrong about stuff. And I have not. So from that standpoint, if I'm wrong about, you know, something that I've said, that's just definitely water off of a duck's back. I've never really had a situation where I said something that I should like really walk back. Like I've been bitching about the whole Ukrainian thing for like a while. And I usually hold a view that most people don't hold, you know, because I've seen Ukraine in the news ever since the 90s. And I'm like, and if, even back then, I was like, what the hell's going on with this country? And a couple of shows, you know, a while back, I said, I'm sorry, this is like a corrupt country. Doesn't mean that they deserve to get bombed, but I'm saying everybody that's treating them like they're some kind of like angelic system out there is really fooling themselves. And I start that, if I were to actually go back and think of anything that I've ever said on the show that could really rattle somebody's cage, that would be it. But as I said on the show after that, I'm like, I'm not making any apologies because I actually believe that this is the truth. Now, if I'm wrong, that's one thing. And I can be wrong. It's okay to be wrong. You don't have to be perfect. But as far as I believe right now, I think that that's right. But it's so controversial that it really rattles cages. Now, I haven't had anybody come up to me or like DM me or you know, throw me an email or anything that says, hey, you suck because you said that. So that hasn't happened. But even if it did, I'd have to go look back to my reasoning as to why I think this, and then ask myself the question, do you really mean it? Do you actually believe that this is the truth? And did you say what you believe? And if the answer is yes, then it's like the rest of the water off the duck's back. I don't worry about it. Now, any kind of OMG moments was essentially like when I hit 950 and I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to hit 1,000 at one point. And when I flip that roller over into four digits, honestly, that's an oh my God moment. It really is, especially considering that, you know, what I do doesn't, you know, it's not like I'm like a Peter McCormick where I'm going to go buy my own football team and you know, twin Aston Martins for me and my dad. It's like, it's like not anywhere close to that. And so I guess another oh my God moment would be, you know, should I just hang it up and go do something that actually makes real money? And then you start thinking of all the things that are out there. And I've been in this space for so long that I'm realizing that there are very few things out there that are going to be of value in the future that we're trying to build. If we believe our own bullshit, and I do, then a lot of the stuff that's out there right now is just honestly, how can we get as many people as we can to give as much money as we can to me by me fooling them that this service is actually something that they need? You see, it's just, I don't buy half of the bullshit I grew up with anymore. And that's an actual being in Bitcoin too long, oh my God moment. But bringing it back to the podcast, there really hasn't been anything where I've like, man, I really screwed up. You know, I really screwed up. I like what I do. I like the people that when I do have guests on, I like the people that I select. I like the conversations that we have. And there's never really been a time where I felt disingenuous or I don't know, like I was leading somebody astray, which is why I don't give any predictions on price on the show. Cause I'm like, I can't do that kind of shit. So I don't know if that answered your question, but that's sort of the way that I think about it.
Yeah. Well, and when you were talking, I was kind of thinking, because we've 89 shows, we have real lives too. Right. So,
right.
You know, if my wife mentions, oh, he does a podcast, I'm like, oh boy, here we go. Is it something in your life that, you know, you tell people, is it something, you know, cause it's one thing, oh really, what's it about? Then you're like, oh, Bitcoin. It's hard enough to talk about Bitcoin, with people that just really aren't receptive to it, but actually getting into the podcast portion of it too, that really shows that you're all in. You know, do you live with your podcast on your sleeve as you walk around?
No. Not on my sleeve, but I mean, I will tell people that I do have a podcast, and then they will go, well, what's it about? And I'll just say financial technology.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like, I don't know this person very well. They're asking a question, you know, it's like, it's a good question. I have a good answer for it. And it's not an answer that that sets up one of those, potential confrontational situations. Oh my God, you're one of those Bitcoiners. So you like child trafficking. And I don't want to have that discussion because it's not worth my time, because I know the truth. I'm not going to spend my time trying to figure out how to tell people that half the shit, or well, 75 to 90% of everything they hear about Bitcoin is just either wrong or a straight up lie. So I just say financial technology. And then if I continue to know these people, like I'm a member of the Toastmasters Club out here in the town that I'm at. And if you don't know what Toastmasters is, if you want to learn how to, you know, get over your fear of public speaking, if you have one, go join Toastmasters. You'll get slapped out of your civilian shit real quick, and you'll be able to talk to any size crowd about anything, anywhere, at any time. And there's a guy there, and I had told them, I said, look, I have a podcast. It's financial technology podcast. And then the more and more that I've been going to these meetings, every once in a while, I mention Bitcoin every once in a while. There's another guy that keeps talking about blockchain. I don't want to get into the confrontation with him, but there's this other person in that same group that finally came up to me and said, what's the URL for your podcast? I go, okay, man, I'll email it to you, brother. Here it is. That's like, and then I have a warning. I'm like, I go, understand, this is a podcast for adults. Language is involved, and ideas that you may not like are also involved. So if you don't have the heart or the stomach for it, just be aware. And that's sort of the way that I handle that.
It sounds like, Nania, that you've given up to an extent on orange pilling people that you meet.
A little bit. It depends on who it is. Again, it's not just who it is. It depends on how much time I've spent in a hole with a particular people or a particular group of people, as to, because I have to judge for myself what their level of reception would be. Because again, when we get down to it, we all know that time is the most valuable asset that we possess. And I've gotten to the point now where I've wasted a lot of it. Like one of my best friends was begging me to unload all of my Bitcoin at 8,000 and take it all off the table because I played the casino and I had won at 8 grand. And this is a guy that had just finished, you know, like selling a business for $1 million. And you'd think that maybe I should listen to him. And of course I didn't listen to him, because he has no idea what he's talking about. And I tried to tell him about it before. He made all the signs that he just wasn't going to be receptive to it. And I stopped talking to him about it. And this happened with a couple of other friends of mine. I, like in 20, 16. I told another friend of mine about it, and his response was, I'm not going to touch it. I don't want to have anything to do with it. And again, fairly successful in business. And I'm like, you'll buy it when you'll buy it at the price that you deserve. And I tried it a few times with people, and realized that, you know, the reception wasn't all that great is when I started really kind of boring down into, well, who is this person? What does this person actually want out of life? What's their, do they have an ethical set? Do they have a moral set that I can see? Is there anything in their demeanor, their mannerisms, the way that they talk, the things, the topics that they want to talk about? Is there anything that suggests that they might be ready for this? Because most people, it's like most people are not ready to be unplugged from the matrix, Neo. They're just not ready. And if you don't recognize that, then you're going to waste an awful lot of time trying to unplug somebody that just absolutely doesn't want to be unplugged. And you end up with a fight. And it's possible that you could make, you know, like instead of making a friend, you make somebody who just doesn't want to talk to you. And it's not worth it. And so yeah, there's a few people that I know that are receptive. I do talk to them about it and they're learning about it, but it's not many. You know, it's like my kids, my wife, and like a couple of people that I'm not related to. I have orange pilled my sister, you know, so that's cool. But other than that, I think like if I have one win, if each one of us has one win, I think we're doing good, honestly.
Yeah, I think for much the same reasons, Nanya, I gave up orange pilling as well. I was a pretty enthusiastic orange pillow once upon a time, but it's just some people are just not receptive to it. And I recently read a quote that resonated, which is, don't try to be the tugboat, be the lighthouse. And I think I'm going to take that approach. I'm not going to drag people to Bitcoin. I'm just going to live the Bitcoin way. And if that's appealing to folks, they're going to ask me and then I'll talk to them.
That's my approach, Avi. I'm the walking lighthouse. I wear my Lightning Store shirts every day, whether it's, you know, it's going up for Everlora. I'm wearing my Pleb Chain Radio shirt today. Satoshi shirt, the long sleeve I wore yesterday at family time. You know, if people don't, and if they ask what it is, I'll just kind of mention, oh, this is that. So they know where to find me when they have questions to ask type of thing.
I am the lighthouse. I like that as well, Avi. I think that's a really good analogy for this. It's like, you know where I am and I won't move. And as long as they know that they know where you're at and you won't move, then you automatically generate some trust, whether they believe in it or not.
But I am the person that they text when Bitcoin starts surging. And they say, is now a good time to buy? Like, oh God, you don't get it, man.
Yeah. It's always a good time to buy. And you know, I haven't gotten any texts. I haven't gotten a single text from anybody going, what the hell's going on with this thing?
You're so far in the hole. You lost all your friends. That's just how it is. If you get deep into Bitcoin, if you're plebhood.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a real thing that I think people should actually be warned about, is that it becomes very difficult to have normal conversations with people outside of this group. And this is a huge group. I mean, it's like, it's not small by any means, but like the friends you grew up with, all honestly, it's like, I can't talk about, I mean, I don't know. I can't talk about sports ball. I'm not interested in UFC. I just don't care about what new operating system Microsoft is releasing, and iPhone 16 bores me to tears because it's not anything different.
Or movies, like, Hollywood. That's another one on here that these guys like talking about.
Oh just, God.
Yeah. Celebrity worship.
Oh yeah, I get that. I get that a lot. Did you see that TikTok video? I'm like, I don't care. It's like, you know, like if you want to talk to me about soil, growing trees, how animals move across the land, you know, homesteading, you know, what it would be like to be on a farm, you know, ranching or anything to, you know, anything like that. And then obviously money, macroeconomics, Bitcoin, the way all these things fit together. Hell yeah. I will sit down and I will have as long of a conversation with your ass as possible. And we don't need, and there's a lot of ranchers that I know, and I can have these conversations with those guys. I've brought Bitcoin up to one of them, you know, to one of them, because I can talk about all these other things and they're just as important to me. And I don't have to bring Bitcoin along for the ride everywhere that I go. And I think that that's also important. But every once in a while, I'll talk to a rancher and, you know, I'll mention Bitcoin, and then they'll start asking a few questions about it. And I just try to have as light of a touch as I possibly can, just so that all I need is the seed to have some amount of soil contact. And then at that point, you just have to walk away and let the seed do its own thing.
The Johnny Appleseed of Bitcoin culture.
Gotta. Yeah, gotta. And I hope to have more, you know, getting back to the podcast. I've been meeting more and more ranchers, and I've almost got a few of them that want to come onto the show. It's to talk about ranching. And one of the last ones that I did was the episode about ranch wars and the issue that's going on with the King Ranch. And I think that the ranchers that I'm talking to up here are starting to really realize that they're in a lot of danger. And it's not just, you know, it's not just regulations coming down from the state and federal level that's, you know, causing them some pain. It's, you know, what's happening to their money. And these guys are, you know, they're purpose built to be sovereign. They're ranchers for a reason. They don't go to movies. They don't hang out with like large groups of people at sporting events, because they don't, honestly, if you're a rancher, you get along better with animals than you do people. And these guys, I find, are probably the most potentially receptive people to it, but I tread very, very lightly with these folks, because when you start talking about something that they don't understand, some of them will actually look at you and go, well, I'm just probably not smart enough, you know, smart as you to understand this. And that's when no, that ain't it, dude. It's hard to initiate conversations with people about something that's technological, who themselves don't feel they're technological, and automatically presume that they don't have the prowess to be able to understand it. And in what I've told a couple of the ranchers that have said that is that nothing could be further from the truth. I'm clearly failing at being able to explain it to you in a way that it needs to be explained to you. And I think a lot of us have a problem with like, oh, the difficulty adjustment and this and the hard cap, and oh, here, look at this equation that describes the entirety of you know, how Bitcoin is injected into the system. And no, we have to have a way more human touch at being able to explain how this fixes what is broken. And that's an entire discussion of how fiat money has failed, or how we've allowed it to fail. And I think starting there is a much, much more effective means, but it means engaging in a much longer conversation, which means that you have to have multiple conversations with the same people. And, you know, how much time do you have to go meet new friends? It's sort of one of those things.
And, Godspeed, Sailor, going to Microsoft for a 3-minute presentation on Bitcoin.
Do we know when he does that?
I don't
December know. December 12th or something like that. Sometime in early December.
I'm just 3 minutes.
Well, you know, 3 minutes, it doesn't sound like a lot, but that's one of the things about, you know, and I'll shill Toastmasters again. It teaches you how to be able to put together presentations that are anywhere between 2, 3, 5 minutes, 7 minutes, 10 minutes. I mean, you get to the point where somebody says, okay, here's the parameters. You have 3 minutes, and you go, I can do that. And then you sit your ass down and you build that presentation for exactly 3 minutes, and you practice your ass off. and you go in there and you just completely knock the ball out of the park, and it can, in 3 minutes, can be effective.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've got to say, have you ever heard Saylor explain anything in 3 minutes? He takes hours to just warm up.
That is going to be Saylor's Achilles heel on 3 minutes. We'll have to see. I mean, maybe he's got chops for a 3 minute presentation. Maybe he doesn't, but one thing's for certain, we're probably going to find out.
So going back to podcasting and everything we've seen like you mentioned, it's the technology of things. Fountain came about, I want to say in 2019 or maybe 2021. All of a sudden Fountain came around and you had the value for value Bitcoin. What was your experience with Fountain? And that's, by the way, that's where I found you. That's where I started listening to you, was Fountain. So maybe that increased your reach or got to the people that wanted to, know about you the most, but how'd that change your engagement? And maybe a little history on that.
Oh man, to tell you the truth, I've been making sure that when I do a show announcement, the link that I use to either, put on LinkedIn or Twitter or Nostr or whatever, because I do it all, I always use the Fountain link. And I've been doing that for as long as Fountain's been out. I've been using the Fountain app since when it was first released. I was using Breeze because the Breeze wallet has a value for value enabled podcast app inside of it. And then the minute that I realized that there was this thing called Fountain, and that was like, God, over 3 years ago, I immediately started using it and I never looked back. It is hands down one of the best, most enabled and slickest podcasting apps that I've ever seen. And it is generally speaking my daily driver, except that for the last, a couple of months ago, some weirdness, occurred with it because Oscar Mary, when he fused Nostr in as the social layer, which was honestly was the most killer thing that I could have seen him do, just say, you know what, we're going to strip out our own social layer and we're just going to replace it with Nostr. And I have other thoughts about that particular thing. But when he did that, it did cause some minor problems. And I started kind of not looking for other daily drivers, but I said, okay, well, Fountain's kind of broke. It was broke for like about a month or whatever. And I go, this gives me the opportunity to check out other podcast apps. And I checked a lot of them out, and I just love the way Fountain does everything. And going back to when Oscar Mary made the decision to strip out the social layer and replace it with Nostr, I was like, that's the most forward-looking person that I'd seen in a long time. Because how hard is it to say this entire set of code that we built to handle this social layer, we're going to destroy it. And then we're going to replace it with this thing that somebody else built. That's got to be a very difficult decision to make, much less enable, right? But when he did that, it was like you had mentioned at the top of the show that I seem to have gotten the notion of what Nostr is very, very quickly. And you're right, I did. I was like, I don't want to be left behind on this. And I really started thinking about what does Nostr mean on all these different levels. And when I saw Oscar Mary just strip out an entire social layer and replace it with Nostr, I was like, you're going to see more of this. You're going to see a lot more of this. And Oscar was one of the very first movers to do that. And because he's done that, it makes, when I look at boostograms coming through on various individual episodes, now that I know that each one of those things are linked to Nostr and I can re-note those things directly out of Fountain, I can see those same things over on any Nostr client that I see. The integration is so beautiful that I don't think we're really understanding quite the power that's been unleashed there. And I think that this is going to grow alongside people figuring out that value for value really is important. And they, you know, people really need to start moving over to that model, or at least testing it out. Make sure you, you know, tell people, you know, use value for value, do boostagrams, even if they have advertising, you know, do boostagrams anyway, talk about value for value, ask people, you know, to help you replace your advertising model with straight value for value. I don't see anything wrong with that. But as we move into this model, the Nostr being the social layer for value enabled podcasting apps is going to be critical. For me, it already is, but I think it's going to become more critical for artists, podcasters, you name it. This whole thing is all I can think of at this moment, and give you an idea, is Lars Ulrich. I've got a picture in my mind of Lars Ulrich wearing a suit, sitting in front of Congress, belly aching about Napster. I'm like, you have no idea what you actually did when you bellyache like that. You actually started what we're seeing now, but it was way back in the 90s. But I think that whole Napster thing really started the ball rolling, and it's just now that we see the downstream effect of just punching out of all of this. And Fountain is one of the apps that allows people to see what the potential is.
Yeah. Well, and Nostr is very much like RSS, the way it pushes out everywhere. And I think, you know, credit to Oscar for noticing that, seeing that, and understanding the importance of that, and back making his client, well, making his app backwards compatible become a client. That was an amazing feat that we haven't seen yet. And that just goes to show that it's possible for any legacy platform or whatnot to kind of reinvent the way they socialize.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing what Oscar has up his sleeve next. It's going to be very interesting. And I'm always listening to the podcast for Adam Curry and Dave Jones has a podcast called Podcasting 2.0. And every week they sit down and talk about what it is they're building and how they're building it. And what's in the pipe is kind of amazing. It's almost going to be magic. So if you're not listening to that, if you want to know more about Podcasting 2.0, then look for the Podcasting 2.0 podcast with Adam Curry and Dave Jones. It's enlightening.
Is Adam Curry a Nostr guy now?
I'm
hoping he's coming around to the idea.
I think eventually he will. He kind of gets it, but I think that he's just kind of burnt out on most social media, no matter what it is. And even though I'm the first person to say Nostr is not social media aspect of Nostr is just the low hanging fruit that was clearly going to be picked first, but he'll understand it. And I think his animosity here, you know, up until now, and especially Dave Jones, because he really has said some pretty nasty things about Nostr. I think it stems from Fiat Joff one day, not terribly long ago, stated that Nostr is going to replace RSS. And I think that really pissed Adam Curry and Dave Jones off, because the RSS has been, you know, the mainstay for everything podcasting for God only knows how long. I think forever. I think for as long as podcasting has been around, it's been basically RSS. And I think that stuck in their craw, and I don't think that they understood that just because Fiat Joff said it means that any of the rest of us believe it. Because I think I honestly, I love Fiat Joff, But I think Nostr replacing RSS is one of the dumbest ideas that I've ever heard. And I don't mean it in so far that it wouldn't be able to do it. But my question is, RSS is so freaking simple. Why would you do it? Why not just figure out a way to intake and ingest RSS feeds into Nostr instead of saying things like we're going to replace it, thereby trying to destroy all these other industries? And I think that's what has spun Adam and Dave Jones around, so that they're going to be a little bit later to the game.
Well, Fiat Joff certainly isn't known for his diplomacy and speaking skills. So Nani, speaking of Nostr, right? I think we're all, the three of us actually, are approaching our 2-year Nostr anniversary. How have you seen the protocol and just the general ecosystem and culture evolve since you started, what was it? Yeah, almost 2 years ago now.
Oh God, it's a whirlwind. I remember after Domus was released, because I was using a desktop client back in the day, like over 2 years ago, and I can't remember what it was. And I think it was around October or November, a couple of years ago, and I started using one of the very earliest web browser clients that was Nostr, that was a Nostr client, and
Enigma or Astral.Ninja.
Yeah, I remember using Astral, and I remember using Enigma. I can't remember where I set my
Brandly.
Was it that Brandly one? I think I saw that like a couple of times, but I think I was using Astral once I had my NPUB generated and I found Astral. I started using that a lot, and then I went to Christmas. So I was out of town. I was up in Colorado and Domus had just dropped. So I got Domus on my phone while I was up there and put in my inset, cause I had it with me, and cause we weren't thinking about security at the time. It was so long ago, and I've been using Domus ever since. And I remember having to download, update, like sometimes there'd be 2 updates a day on Domus. And it was one of the most amazing things that I had ever seen, because it's like that app changed week to week to week to week for like 6 months. And it was absolutely amazing. But especially around the time of the holidays that I was up there, I saw more changes to Domus during that 2 weeks that I was up in Colorado than I did for the last 6 months. And it was like that everywhere. And just watching every single piece of low-hanging fruit, which is all the social media stuff, essentially proof of concepts of direct replacements of YouTube, direct replacements of, well, not TikTok, at least not yet, Instagram. There's been several of these things. Marketplaces came up, all kinds of stuff. And it was the whole aspect of realizing that I got an NSEC and I got an NPUB, and I have those managed by AlbiHub is my web manager. And I would, when I finally had logged into enough of these clients, and I was doing a lot of that last year, and you know, eviscerating my follow list like 7 or 8 times, I started realizing that there are clients that I don't know about. And they have, that client already has my profile picture, my banner, my bio information, anything that's in the metadata of the, you know, any of the clients that I'm using right now. And I don't even know of its existence. And yet I know there's a client out there that if I were to give it, you know, my NSEC and NPUB directly from AlbiHub, that my profile's already set up. Once you realize what that means, it really should blow like the socks off of people. And we're still having a little bit of difficulty imparting how important that is. And when I gave a talk, I gave a speech actually at Toastmasters about Nostr, and I said, if you go go from Twitter and you don't have an Instagram account and all of a sudden you want to start using Instagram, you got to build everything up again. Your follow list, your profile, you've got to start like adding in content. I go versus me where I find the Instagram, you know, the Instagram like client for Noster. And all I do is I put in my keys and everybody that I follow and everybody that follows me is already there. And if it was able to pull a certain kind of note out of the relays, that is like a note designed to have a nice picture and then re-renders that as a picture and it looks like Instagram, all of a sudden I'm done and I didn't have to do anything. And when you put it like that, people have a tendency to stand up and listen. And then I'll say, and now think of it this way, your profile is already set up on 150 clients that have yet to exist. You're already there. And the client doesn't even exist. The second somebody decides to use the Noster protocol to power whatever it is that they're building, you're already there. And the idea that my son has, and he doesn't have one to build for Noster, but let's say he had he's like 12, and by the time he's 18, decides to finally sit down and build a client for Noster, I'm already set up on what he has not built yet. I don't think we've ever seen anything like that before. So that's sort of my high level view of what's going on with Noster and how I've been interacting with it, lately. I still am in awe every single day that I go to any of the clients and look at what's going on over there.
How receptive were the Toastmasters?
Oh, they loved it.
Yeah.
That group really did, they really did understand what was going on. But that's the whole reason that you go to something like Toastmasters is that, so you can build the 5-minute to 7-minute speech that tells people what they need to know and get rid of all the fluff.
Yeah. Yeah. I did a Noster presentation for our Bitcoin meetup here for like 30 people. Even the Bitcoiners, I mean, they're primed for it. it's tough. Noster is one of those ideas, just like Bitcoin, that it takes a few times touching to fully grasp what's going on there.
Yeah, and it's going to be up to us to continue to provide those touches.
Yeah, and when X was, being captured, what it appeared with all the censorship and whatnot, Noster was an immediate, immediate use case. It had immediate, it solves an immediate problem. And I feel like, with Elon taking over and the current administration and everything, it's perceiving like it's a place of truth. But I just cannot get my, I just don't think, I mean, long-term, it's hard for me to believe that. So Noster is that long-term solution, regardless of whoever's in the administration, whatever the government does, whatever it may be, Noster is the freedom tech.
Exactly. And it's not just, not just our government. It's all governments of all the nations of the world, no matter who changes what.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's a big, huge point, because we always internalize our government. We internalize our money when in fact there is a world out there that needs Bitcoin the most, that needs Noster the most, and it fluctuates.
Right.
So Noster came about, obviously Fountain became a client. I noticed that you are one of the few that tools around, meaning, you're utilizing Noster in ways that, that others aren't. How's Noster changed the way you podcast? Could be Fountain, could be a Zap.stream. Tell me about what you've kind of found along the way.
Shipyard.
Shipyard would be where you're scheduling notes, or tell me about that.
Well, it does more than that, but I specifically use shipyard.pub, which is a Pablo F7Z construction.
Yeah. Shout out Pablo.
Yeah, shout out Pablo. I've been using shipyard.pub to schedule notes for a while. So I'll give you an example of the way that it changed the way that I did podcasting. It didn't change the show. It's just the way that I, for lack of a better term, market it. Back in the day when I was mostly on Twitter, before they banned me. I had to schedule notes or schedule tweets like that would basically be almost the same. Hey, here's the podcast. Here's the name of the show. Here's what we talked about. And here's the link to the actual episode. And I had to schedule that like, because I wanted to hit all the time zones. So like about eight, you know, I'd have eight of these things, but you had to schedule them individually. And it took a lot of work, but with Shipyard, and you had to construct each note. I mean, because you couldn't have the exact same thing. You had to like delete a space, add a period, you know, because otherwise it would be a duplicate tweet, and Twitter would never allow that. But with Shipyard, I put out two different kinds of announcement for the show. And then I'll go over to shipyard.pub and look at those two notes. And then each one of them will have a little button where I can reschedule their re-noting. And then a little timer comes up and I can reschedule it for, you know, later on during the day. And I usually try to do it like each one of these two notes. I'll schedule them to come back up into the people's Nostr feeds like every 3 hours. And Pablo makes that, he just automated that whole system where all I got to do is hit a button, select a time, and hit send. And then it keeps it in the queue. And then at that time, it just renotes the thing. And if I were to do that on Twitter, it would have taken, you know, it takes like, I don't know, a good 20 minutes. Do it on Shipyard, I'm done in 2 minutes. And so if anybody is still not using Shipyard, this is one of the tool sets that I use to make sure that, you know, if because Nostr, because there's no algorithm, the algorithm has to be you. And the way that my algorithm works, the way that I'm actually acting as the algorithm, is to look at the time zones across the world. When did I release the first note? Okay, I need to release, you know, that same note an hour later, and then 3 hours after that, and then 3 hours after that, and 3 hours after that, and Shipyard makes that work. And that's one of the utilities that utility tools that Nostr has that makes stuff like that work. And it's honestly, it's been a game changer, because otherwise it would have taken me 20 minutes to do that shit on Twitter. And if I can like shave off 18 minutes, I'm going to do it.
Are you great. Still streaming to Zap.stream?
Yeah.
When you do your show? Cause I noticed you were doing that months ago. You were tooling around with that, doing your live stream. Is that still something that you do?
I'm probably going to do that again, but I haven't been doing it since last summer. And it's just like, you know, I started thinking about it. I go, well, there's only like, you know, a few people that actually ever come in. And I started going, well, you know, maybe this is something that I should really work on the reach of the show first before I start, you know, doing stuff like live streaming. But honestly, Zap.stream makes it so freakishly easy to plug into something like OB3 or what the hell am I thinking of? OBS, like OBS Studio. The integration is so easy that it's sort of, I don't really have a reason not to, but it's just, it's kind of like a news show. And I just like the thought of like, you know, just sitting there looking at me while I'm reading, you know, reading you the news and then pontificating about it. I'm like, I don't know, if I was doing something like, you know, a permaculture class or something like that, or teaching somebody how to, you know, plant a tree or, you know, make cuttings from comfrey, then yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But I don't know. I'm thinking about getting back to doing that. I just haven't made a decision yet.
Love it. So, Nanya, as we close out, do you have any advice for aspiring podcasters out there?
You got to break through that wall that you guys were talking about. It's and you know, even Adam, I had a question to Adam Curry. You know, I flat out asked him. I'm like, can you because he's got, he can look at anybody's numbers. He can look at anybody's metrics that he wants to. And I'm like, can you just look? And I mean, am I anywhere close to having this, you know, like, I guess the question that I asked is, it's not, was it worth it? It was, I don't know how to measure up to, you know, other podcasts, not only in this space, but just in podcasts in general. And his reaction was, he's like, do you get value out of it? Because if you don't, then you need to stop. And that value can be anything. If all you're looking for is money as value and you're not getting it, then you're probably in the wrong game. Not to say that it can't be done. It's just that how much do you want to fight to get there? And I've been fighting this, you know, I've been doing this for 6 years. You know, it's like, I can't, it's weird. I can't not do it. I mean, I haven't done a show since Monday, but I really want to just hang out with my family. And, you know, when things like that come up, family is always more important. But it's like, you know, when this next Monday rolls around, I'm not going to not be able to sit and build a show and put it out there. And I think you kind of have to be that way to, you know, to fight through that first, you know, 3 episodes or 9 episodes or, you know, whatever that primary wall is. And how you do that is entirely up to, well, it's entirely up to you, because there's no instruction manual on how to fight through something that looks like it's kicking your ass.
Yeah. Sage words indeed. Well, Nanya, we really appreciate you taking the time, giving us the wisdom, the lowdown on podcasting. Is certainly about 10x the number of, over 10x, 11x the number of podcasts that QW and I are at. Certainly enjoyed this conversation. Folks in the live audience, appreciate you listening in. And if you're listening to the recording, I do hope you're doing so on the Fountain Podcasting app and supporting the Value for Value revolution. Once again, thank you, everyone. Thank you, Nanya Bidness.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here. Thanks for inviting me. It's always a thrill when you guys give me a call and ask me if I want to be on the show. Thank you so much.
And if anybody listening doesn't know, Bitcoin and .. is the podcast.
Bitcoin and it, honestly, I will let you know what's going on most days of the week about what's going on that particular day, and that way you can, you know, by the time you get to work, you can figure out what the hell's going on that you got to watch out for.
Yeah, it's just a no bullshit podcast. You give the news, you throw in a little bit of your opinion from an experienced pleb, and you're not Mr. Rockets price predictions. So.
Oh God, I hate that shit. Yeah, exactly. You're not going to get that from me. So yeah, be aware.
Well, we appreciate it. Thank you very much. And it's an honor to celebrate your 1000th show coming up with you. It's certainly something that we felt very important to appreciate your proof of work as we, navigate this self-delusion and self-belief together. Thank you very much. Anybody listening, please support Value for Value. Give us some feedback on Fountain. Share us on Fountain. Boost us on Fountain or Noster, which would be going through Fountain. So thank you very much, and we will see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Y'all.